Blog Talk Radio.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but your credit card
has
been
declined. Your unemployment benefits ran out 2 weeks ago.
What do you mean I'm overdrawn?
2 weeks ago.
I still have checks left. Checks
2 weeks
left.
Ago.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Bad credit holding you back? Want to become a real estate investor but haven't won the lottery? Learn how to fix your credit. Get out of debt and build true financial independence with real estate in 2 hours a week. Tune in to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She'll show you how, without winning the lottery or working 10 jobs. And here's your host, Heather Wagenhall.
Are listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio with Heather Wagenhals. I am she, your hostess with the financial mostest, your money mentor. And for this fabulous snowy Saturday, April 9th, 2011, we are broadcasting live from the Log Mahal in a very white Christmas in April day. Kind of interesting. All of a sudden we got some unexpected snow here April 9th. It's so crazy. It's so chilly. And I can't wait because later on this afternoon I'm going to go run around and play in the snow one last time before it goes away. So great. Thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to the broadcast. I am she, Heather Wagenhals, your money mentor, and we broadcast the Unlock Your Wealth Radio program each and every Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and talk about crisis management and financial wellness tools designed to help everyone, man, woman, and child alike, manage their finances and attitudes. Key word, attitudes, for the dual purpose of achieving immediate financial wellness today and getting ourselves on that path to financial freedom tomorrow and into our future. And we do that one key at a time, 1 week at a time, from our Keys to Riches Financial Wellness series. And we just kicked off our new season, which means we started the keys over last week with acceptance and affirmation. This week, we move forward, and now we take action and make assessment. So I kind of call this day our Going Green Day. I love all of the implications of that phrase, going green, money green, going green, because we're doing an organic assessment of our finances. And you're going, what does that mean? But you'll see as we move into the second hour and begin our Keys to Riches Financial Wellness series and talk about specifically what we mean by organic assessment. But it's important now that we've identified through last week's lesson in the Keys to Riches about coming to terms with whatever it is that's going on with us, because we must acknowledge whatever is going on in order to take some action and move forward to correct it. So we identified what it is that we wanted to change, and now we're going to start taking action and make systematic changes each and every week through the rest of this radio show season in order to accomplish that financial freedom, get ourselves going in that direction, but to create that immediate financial wellness. And it's amazing how the mind feels once we know we are in a process. We don't have to be done with something. We just have to be on the path. And it's so refreshing after last week to know that we are on the path. We have an incredible show scheduled for you guys. I can't begin to tell you how exciting this week is going to be. We have two awesome guests lined up for you. And we have Minutes on Your Money. We'll talk about our government shutdown. We'll also talk about April being Financial Literacy Month and the value and importance of that, and why, what you need to be doing to create that financial wellness in your life. We also have our Millionaire Minute. And because we are still before tax day, we are going to still give you our tax tips direct from the IRS to help you in your last-minute filing needs. This week we have Aaron Brehove and Don Medinius joining us. Aaron Brehove is our Investor's Edge guest. He is the fraud father. Isn't that cool? Yes, we're going to have the fraud father on, and he's going to talk about financial fraud and litigation. He has also written a book about body language, and I'm so excited to talk to him about that because I'm a big fan of neurolinguistic programming, and what do we know about our ability to communicate effectively? Only 7% of the actual specific words we use comprise our conversation. So you could pick the most articulate, the most innovative, the most expressive, the most accurate words, and guess what? It don't matter because 55% of your conversations are nonverbal. Isn't that impressive? So we'll talk to the fraud father. We also have Don Medinius dropping by in a second hour, and he is going to talk about his book, The New Era of Financial Success, and his REACH methodology, a Six Sigma black belt. He is going to, and that's an incredible thing. I started reading Six Sigma for Dummies. I'm a big fan of the Dummies books because they break it down to the so super simple that you can't help but learn it. And Six Sigma is a powerful process, and so we're going to talk about how he took his experiences with Six Sigma to come up with the Power of the REACH methodology to help you achieve personal and financial success in the second hour. So I'm so excited about that. We've got an incredible slate of shows, an incredible slate of segments during this show. Too much alliteration without me practicing my She Sells Seashells by the Seashore. So we've got some great stuff coming up for you. Now, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, our regular listeners are very keyed into playing for the trivia question of the week. And each week, we ask a trivia question of the audience to win fabulous prizes with the correct answer. Just a couple of those ideas of fabulous prizes are autographed books from previous show guests, or you could win my latest book, Bushido Business, and I will personalize that to either you or someone you would like to give that book to. All you have to do is correctly answer the trivia question for this week. Now, the bang for the buck comes two ways. One, by being a regular listener, or two, by being a member and subscriber to our electronic magazine. Why is that, you say? Because our trivia questions are based on a previous show. And we do that because regular listeners will have an edge on the competition. But just in case you can't listen live, if you are unfamiliar with how our show works, you can go get it at either our website, unlockyourwealth.com, later in the archives, or you can visit iTunes. And we are repodcasted on iTunes, podcast.com, and a litany of other places where you can get our broadcasts. And by being a subscriber to the electronic magazine, it comes out on Fridays before Saturday's show. So you will know what the trivia question is so you can seek out that previous broadcast and have an edge on the competition. How fabulous is that we do that for you? Kind of a little reward for regular listeners or subscribers, if you will. So this week's trivia question is from the midweek update. We discussed tips for saving money at the movies. All you have to do is name one of these tips that we mentioned on Wednesday's show to be this week's winner. Now, in order to win, you can do it one of three ways. If you are listening from our unlockyourwealth.com website, you can email us at trivia, T-R-I-V-I-A, at unlockyourwealth.com. If you are listening from our Blog Talk Radio show page, you can hop in the chat room where the illustrious, ever-popular Elena DeFiore, our program director, is moderating the chat room, and she would be thrilled to take your potential right answer. And let's say you're driving around and unable to chat in or email in, never fear, the telephone still is here. And you can call in to win at 1-718-508-9002. 1-718-508-9002. So again, we talked about saving money while going to the movies from our midweek update on Wednesday's show. If you're not familiar, we broadcast each and every Wednesday the midweek update and give you 30 minutes of financial tips and tricks you can incorporate into your life right now to save money and get you through the week until you hit the Saturday show. We broadcast that each and every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So you can listen live or download later to save big bucks for you and your family. I'm so excited about what's coming up because we have such a fabulous show planned for you. And I think you're going to enjoy it. I am so excited about meeting the Fraud Father. And we will do that in just a moment. So please stay tuned for more Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio. We will be right back with more coming up after this.
Hi, this is Scott Black with EmpowerU.net. You're listening to Heather Wagenhall's on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching should be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420 or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K-Free Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, Industries.com. Like, go there, totally!
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Diradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Diradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on 2fortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Wonder why money comes so easily to everyone but you? Tired of getting what you've always got? Need a new way of thinking to get ahead in life but don't have time to read a book on it? Now you can learn what the millionaires do that the masses don't with Unlock Your Wealth Radio to Go, your 15-minute cup of millionaire motivation to get the specific strategies to ditch what doesn't work and have more of what you deserve in your everyday life. Join Heather Wagenhals to start your day the millionaire way. Listen to Heather Tuesdays at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Time at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio. I am she, your crazy money mentor, your purveyor of prosperity. That would be me. And I'm so excited about my next guest because he's the Fraud Father. What a cool nickname. Aaron Brehove is an author, speaker, and media expert in the fields of interpersonal communications, financial fraud, and litigation. As a fraud investigator by day, Aaron has been involved in cases concerning our country's most notorious financial investigations. His forensic investigations have assisted in dismantling multi-billion dollar Ponzi schemes, uncovered major instances of tax evasion, and investigated the ongoing problems of embezzlement and insider trading. Working with the U.S. Department of Justice, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the FBI, it has allowed him to witness both the private and public effects of financial and interpersonal manipulation. In conjunction with these analytical abilities, Aaron has also mastered the skills and knowledge needed to become an expert in human interaction. Applying what he has learned about human communication, interrogation techniques, and detecting deception to bring a unique perspective to the examination of not only finances, but of the personal interactions that accompany them. Welcome to the broadcast, Aaron. Aaron, are you there?
Sorry, I was on mute there.
Oh, there we are. I unhooked the wrong microphone. I'm glad the other person wasn't named Aaron, too. They would have started talking. Forgive me for that. I need better glasses.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to meet the Fraud Father. What a cool name. Who gave you that name?
It just kind of popped up after I started teaching classes on nonverbal communication, and I was the sole person there with a fraud background. As I'm a fraud investigator, I've been involved in these multi-billion dollar Ponzi schemes. Well, uncovering them, not involved with them. And,
yeah, thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah, it's not on one side, on the good side. And it's something that just kind of came around. I'm a little bit younger for to be a fraud father, but I'll take the moniker. I like it.
Yeah, I'm all about great monikers. When in the 90s, I was the mortgage goddess. So
ooh,
I like
a little bit better than mine. I like it.
It's awesome. So what led you to fraud?
Well, I have an accounting background, so I'm really interested in knowing the numbers behind things and understanding everything there is to know about a business and how things operate. And I started to get involved with that, and then I became involved with the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners. And it's, as one of the people I work with calls it, the sexy side of accounting. It's really fun. I mean, if there is a sexy side of accounting, I'm not sure, but if there is, this is it. And it's something that's a little more interesting. It's something you don't expect. You have to uncover. It's a fight to find out everything. So as I started getting into accounting and getting into fraud, it got more and more interesting. And you look for the little details, the little clues that can help you figure out frauds. And it's just such an interesting area that I just have dove into it deeper and deeper every day I'm involved with it. And that's kind of how I led into being involved with non-personal or non-verbal communication.
Go ahead.
So with detecting deception is one of the things we really need to know with fraud. That's detecting deception. I took some classes on nonverbal communication, detecting deception through that, and it really started to pique an interest. And I started teaching with the Body Language Institute, and I'm a senior instructor there. And it's just a very, very interesting area. When you get involved with this, you realize that you think it's something you can get involved with, learn about for a month or two, and really move on and become an expert in it and move on to the next level. But it's built up of a number of different sciences, and it's an extremely interesting area, and it's just there's so much more knowledge out there, and there's so much more research out there that anybody can really just dive into for a long time.
I love body language, and I've been a student of it for a variety of reasons. When I used to do a lot of drama and acting, I wanted to be authentic in portraying my characters. So I needed to understand what would the body language, the corresponding body language be with these words that would really take and intimate what I'm trying to convey in a congruent way. That was my first encounter with body language. And then as I became more involved in sales, and I pulled away from broadcasting and entertainment for a while, and I went into sales, it was so apparent that body language, and because I just happened to have carried it with me, was so important in detecting where a customer was along the spectrum. And I could do like some people would do, go through an hour presentation and listen to them say that they were not interested. But within 5 minutes, I knew whether or not I had them with body language while these other people are just barfing up all this information and not pulling these people into the conversation. So I have always been a big fan of body language to check for congruency, what they say, what they mean. And so I'm so excited that you apply that in financial fraud investigations.
Absolutely, and that's probably one of the most important tenets of body language is recognizing congruencies. And it's terrific that you've recognized that. And it's something that if you realize there's incongruencies, that throws up a flag that something may be happening there. You need to ask a few more questions. And it's such a powerful thing in every aspect of your life. So it's great that you've been able to take it from one area and move it over into another area. And as people become experts in their certain fields, it's something they're going to, if you can utilize it in your different fields and apply it with your specialized knowledge, it's so valuable. Can build your efficiencies so much. It's really a terrific science, and I agree with you, and it's terrific you've been able to use it.
Yeah, in my real estate company, when I do my professional development training after folks come to me, we have a whole module on body language and nonverbal communication. And with neuro-linguistic programming, I use it a lot in my public speaking to help cement information to people, whether it's auditory, visual, or kinesthetic. I use my body language to kind of supplant that information to reinforce certain points just by certain gestures and things. So body language is extremely important. Whether or not we acknowledge it, we are influenced by it every day with a variety of images. So tell us something juicy about some of the fraud cases, maybe ones that are already closed and in the past that you can talk about. Can you think of one specific case that you worked on that you were able to uncover that was really juicy?
There's actually not many cases I can talk about right now because the litigation lasts so long. But I will talk. I will give you some of the. Won't give you too many of the details, but I'll give you a little bit of the background. There was a case where a guy was stealing money from elderly people, and what he was doing, the way he was doing this, is he would find out who had Alzheimer's, elderly people that had Alzheimer's. He would help them out, do certain things for them, and they would pay him for this. They would pay him for this help, and he would go back to them, get a $5,000 check for a job he may have done, whatever it may have been, and then he'd go back a week later and get another $5,000 check because they didn't remember they were paying him. So a pretty simple scheme and very hard to prove that there was any intent there. But one of the FBI agents I was working with knew he needed to get a confession from this guy because there wasn't a very good way to prove that he was tricking them into paying them. They actually paid him of their own free will, albeit he knew they had Alzheimer's and he was playing on their disabilities. So this FBI agent that we had to prep him for the interview that he was going to go in, and one of the things he did is before this interview, he told us that he had to really feel like he believed this guy, like he liked this guy, he didn't think he was that bad of a person. So he really made himself believe this because he knew his body language would come across if he really showed how he truly felt, that he was truly disgusted with this guy, he would never confess to him. He would never open up to him. So he needed to build this rapport and really believe he wasn't a bad guy. So he spent days and days and days thinking about ways to rationalize this. So when he did this interview and when he started talking to him, this FBI agent eventually told him, hey, man, you're not a bad guy. You're not selling drugs on the street. You're not killing kids. You're not doing anything too bad. You're taking a few dollars from a few people. It's not that bad of a thing. And he kind of agreed with him, and then he ended up confessing shortly after that, after they built this rapport, and this fraudster really believed that this FBI agent was on his side. So this guy had asked, actually, one woman that he defrauded was literally eating dog food because she had no other food in the house because he had taken all of her other money. So a really, really horrible guy. And this fraudster ended up confessing because the body language was congruent of the FBI agent. It was congruent what he was saying. He said, I really don't think you're that bad of a guy. He really made himself believe this, and it really came through in his body language. And by doing this, the fraudster believed him. And when he was being sentenced in court, he actually stood up and said, I have one thing to say. I'm not a bad person. I haven't stolen from little kids. I haven't sold drugs to them. I haven't killed anybody. And the judge threw the book at him. But it was pretty funny that this guy actually believed that he wasn't that bad of a person. He was terrible, horrific. And the FBI agent, he wasn't a student of body language. He hadn't studied this. This wasn't the academic side, but he did realize that it was going to come through. Whatever it was, he had to believe in himself. Otherwise, those congruencies wouldn't be there. And with body language, there's a recent study that came out that says what happens first in a thought process is your intent, you have the thought, you display the body language, and then you verbalize it. So the last thing that happens when you're speaking to somebody is your verbalization. So you need to have intent. You need to have the correct intent. So he had the intent that this guy wasn't a bad guy, and he needed to get the information out of him. It came across properly, and the fraudster turned. So it's these little things, and understanding that you don't have to believe in body language, but you have to believe in what you're doing. If you believe in what you're doing and you can understand it and display it properly, it's going to help you. It's going to help you extraordinarily throughout your life. And I'm writing a white paper right now on interview and audit interrogation techniques and inefficiencies related to it. And the inefficiencies are not noticing body language, not using body language. So one of the points of it is incongruencies. Wherever we see incongruencies is where what you were saying before, is where we want to jump in. That's where the flags are. That's where these little possibilities of deception are going to be. So
the
if we look at,
tells.
If we, exactly, the physical tells, the verbal tells, what is not congruent? What is not what we expect to see? Ask the questions. Ask the powerful questions. You're not going to find out, you're not going to be able to say, this person's definitely a liar. We're going to be able to say, there's something a little bit unusual here. Why? Let me ask the question to find out why that's unusual.
I'm a big fan of that Criminal Minds TV show, and they always have someone watching the body language looking for the physical tells that, to help trip up the people. And I think that show really helps bring out, I think, the importance of body language because they key you into it through the whole show when they start interrogating people. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and being able to see, and you have to use these. And there's one danger. I don't know if you've seen the TV show Lie to Me.
No, I haven't. I've heard of it.
It's based on a lot of the tenets of body language. it brings them out, universal emotions. There's 7 universal emotions across all cultures. It talks about those a great deal and talks about a lot of different things involved with body language. And one of the – it's a great show, and I enjoy it, but it the people that watch it actually become worse at detecting deception. They think everybody's lying. Because in the show, they'll show somebody scratching their nose, and they're like, oh, that's a liar. So anytime they see somebody scratch their nose at a conversation, they think it's a liar, which isn't always the case. I mean, it could happen, but the thing is you have to realize that some people have a baseline or a norm, and when you understand their baseline or norm, if they always scratch their nose or they always shrug their shoulders, it doesn't necessarily mean there's anything going on there because it's congruent with who they are and how they act.
Well, if
so
they were Romanian
very
and their nose itched, it means they're going to come into money.
Is that what it means
in
Romanian?
It's a little superstition in our culture.
Oh, really?
If your nose itches, that means you're going to come into money. Yeah.
Well, maybe I'll start itching my nose a little bit more. And I don't think I'll lie, but maybe I'll make some more money.
Exactly. So, you know, how can we apply some of the simple techniques when it comes to body language to not detect liars or fraud, but to make sure that when we're communicating with others that we mean what we say we mean? How do we make our body language congruent with our languaging?
So some people have terrific body language. Some people, it's just a natural, charismatic, they're just very good with their body language and they've learned it throughout their life. Other people are displaying the wrong type of body language. For instance, whenever anybody finds out that I'm a body language specialist, they always take a step back, cross their arms, and say, oh, really? What am I thinking now? And because they're crossing their arms, they think I should say that means they're closed off. So I don't think it means they're closed off at all, but that's the perception. And just about everybody knows that when you cross your arms, it's perceived as being a little closed off. So if you understand that what it's perceived as, it doesn't necessarily mean that. You may be cold if you're crossing your arms. So understand that people think you're closed off if you're crossing your arms, if you're blocking yourself with something else, if you have a clipboard in front of you. It's going to give this perception that you're not quite as open. So there's 3 areas of our body, your neck dimple, your belly button, and your groin area. Some people call it the naughty bits. One of my coworkers likes to call it the naughty bits. But it's a little more PC, fun, and playful, but if you keep these 3 areas open, it's going to show an openness that you're not closed off to them. And whether or not it may not mean anything to you, but it may actually be perceived as being a little more open. So if you want to be perceived as open, have those areas open because they're 3 very vulnerable spots in your body. And also point to the person that you're speaking to. If you want them to feel included in a conversation, you can point towards them a little bit. Instead of pointing your body completely away from them, have you ever heard of the term called cold shoulder?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily mean anything if you're giving somebody the shoulder, but it doesn't really feel like you're interacting with them. It doesn't really feel like you're connecting with them. So staying open and pointing towards the person is going to help you connect with somebody, build a little bit more rapport. Or let's say you're interacting with a subordinate or a child or somebody that's something bad has happened to them and you want to build rapport. You don't want to come down on them too hard. Physically getting down on a lower level to physically look up at them with your eyes. So if they're sitting down, if you want to take a knee, just getting your eyes lower than them when you speak to them, they really can't speak down. They don't want to speak down to you. They don't want to close off because they feel empowered by that. They feel empowered that you're at a lower level than them. So it's the easy way to kind of to open up with somebody a little bit more. And there's also, I love talking about how to kind of gain control of a room. A great way to do this is get set up in the door frame of an office. If you're walking into your boss's office, set up in the door frame, and if you touch some part of that door frame, it's going to show ownership of that room. It's going to be perceived as you really own this room, and you're going to have a lot of confidence, a lot of power. But be careful not to put both hands on either side of the door frame because they'll feel closed off and won't feel like they have an exit way, and it'll raise the tension level or raise the anxiety in the room. So if you walk in, if you just have something quick to say to your boss, put your hand on the door frame, put your hips to the side, it'll show a little more likability, won't feel too structured or rigid, and it's a really nice way to come off as confident, with somebody that really should have the confidence in their office, in their room, and they're superior to you. It's a really fun way to play with it, and you can see how people react to it.
I like that. You know, my dad used to always have bald eagles all over his office and right behind him because he thought that that helped him to be more powerful, to exude that confidence. But I always thought that was kind of funny. I'm like, Dad, it comes from you. It's not the eagle. He's like, no, it's the perception. And I'm like, okay, Dad.
Well, if he's believing it, I'm sure it's coming through in his body language.
Yeah, it empowered him, so no matter what. So it worked because he thought it worked. And I think that belief is 99% of convincing someone.
Absolutely. If you believe in yourself, if you believe in what you're saying, it's going to come across, and people are going to be able to see it. With the statement that Tiger Woods read, I don't know if anybody remembers his that press conference that he did. When he came across and said that he was sorry for everything he did, you can see in his body language it's very incongruent what he was saying. And I don't know if he believed in the statement he was reading, but his body language was controlled, and it was something he was doing intentionally, and it wasn't something that he had the intent. He was saying something that he loved somebody, and then he would put his hand over his heart a beat afterwards, which is very incongruent. That's not what happens. And from a previous analysis of him, that's not how he typically acts. He has the body language before, as do most people. So we see these things. If you don't believe it, it's not going to come across properly. And I'm not saying that he wasn't sorry about it, but I'm saying that his statement and his body language was something that he was determined to read. It wasn't something directly from the heart. He was reading a written statement, which is a little bit understandable. But these things come across. And
now, you just brought up a really important point that I want to share because, you know, like you said a little bit ago, just because you have your arms closed doesn't mean you're closed off. You could be chilly. And you just mentioned something that's super important, and that's pacing somebody. So you've got to observe them for a bit to see what their styles are because, you know, different cultures and different nationalities respond differently when it comes to body language. And I know that specifically because I used to do a lot of mortgages with the Hispanic community. And just one example, you know, with Latinos, when they're being reprimanded, they look away from you when they're being reprimanded, because looking directly at you is a sign of defiance. And if they're challenging you, for example, like in a confrontational type of setting, if they're looking you in the eye, they're trying to provoke you to something or escalate the level of whatever is going on. But usually they kind of look away versus when an American scolds their child and they look away, they're like, look at me when I'm talking to you, because they think they're not paying attention. But in other cultures, right, it's kind of deference or respect. So talk about the monitoring of behavior before you start making an analysis. Can you do that?
Sure. And so when we talk about it, we call it baselining or norming somebody. And if you don't baseline or norm somebody, you're not going to be able to get an efficient read. So sometimes I walk into a room and I'll see everybody in the room and I'll have an instant baseline, almost a stereotype of people. And it's a very efficient way to baseline and norm people. But as you get to watch them and see them speak and see them sit in the area, you're going to get a better baseline, a better norm. So if I'm able to see somebody speak in the same situation that I'm going to speak to them in, it's the best way to baseline. So in every situation, people are going to act differently. So, for instance, if I'm a superior or if I'm somebody bringing somebody in my office and reprimanding them and they're acting very nervous and very uncomfortable, they're scratching their nose, they're shrugging their shoulders, their foot's tapping it, you know, a mile a minute, if it's going really, really quickly, you don't say, okay, they're definitely lying about somebody or there's definitely some deception happening. It just means they're in a different situation. So if you have them in that situation, how do they act? You want to see that they're acting the same way in each situation. So there's different levels of baselining. There's your overall baselining. How do they look? Are they dressed in a way that they should be acting in a typical way? It's a very inefficient way to read somebody. But as you get to know them and as you see them speak, as you interact with them a little bit more, you're going to get better reads and better baselines. So a lot of times when we see somebody shrug their shoulders, it has a sense of somebody not being sure of themselves or not being certain about what they're saying. So if somebody says a very definitive statement yet shrugs their shoulders, that typically is seen as a big red flag and you want to come back to that. But if it's somebody that's always shrugging their shoulders whenever they make a definitive statement, then we can mark that as something that's typical to them. Therefore, it's not a flag. It's not an indicator of some type of deception. So we always want to look at people, how they interact, how they typically act in a given situation. So there's a number of things you can look for. There's just general cues, and there's hundreds of different cues you can look at. Different cultures have different ones. Any of the body language books will have these different cues in there, so you can start to understand and really label these cues and what they mean. If it's rubbing their cuticles, rubbing their hands, rubbing their legs, these all mean different things. They all could indicate different things. And once you understand those, then you can see if they do this in a different way. And also you want to see their blink rates is something very easy to see. One thing I like to do when I do interviews is I'll throw a clicky pen on a table, and it just makes it very easy for anybody that's interviewing with me to see how many times they're clicking this pen. When they start clicking like crazy, it's an indicator of something, a change in attitude or a change in emotion. So that might be an indicator of something you want to ask them a few more questions about. If they're tapping their feet, which way they're pointing. All of these things show a different level of body language, and you want to be able to understand that.
That is so neat. What's been probably the most exciting interrogation you've ever had? Like,
so
body
language-wise,
it was so hard to read. What was, like, the one thing that they finally goofed up on that you were able to nail them and get them to do what you wanted them to do?
Well, it's I don't know if my investigation, if there was something that's really driven me crazy that I haven't been able to see. I know when I first started interviewing, I was working with a former FBI agent, and he actually would use this clicky pen thing for me because he said he can see it. He would tell me about people he used to work with. He called them gun cops that could see all of these different cues. And what a gun cop is somebody that can tell if somebody's carrying a gun by the way they're walking. So he said a lot of these guys have these skills, but they don't know how to articulate what's going on. So he had a hard time to articulate what you need to look for. But he said, I'll tell you what you can do right now. I'm going to throw a clicky pen on the table and just watch for that pen, how many times it clicks the pen. It was something I was able to see in my first interview, how much it changed. But it was really interesting to see this. And we ended up coming back to this the person a little bit later. We narrowed down a few areas we want to talk to her about while I was taking notes and he was doing the interview. She was clicking her pen. I noted the pen clicks and the differences. And we came back to it. We narrowed it down to a few areas. And then we ended up finding one of her emails. And one of her emails stated, it was a terrific email. It was kind of blew the top off the case. But it said to this person, how dare you email me here? If anybody ever found this email, we would both go to jail for a long time. So that was a pretty, I could hear the angel sing when I saw that. It showed intent. It showed a lot of things. But narrowing down the different areas we needed to question and look into and making this a more efficient interview was really all we did. It didn't say, okay, well, we have this, and it's not something you're going to show up in court and say. She was clicking her pen a lot more when she was talking about this financial infidelity or the misappropriation of assets, therefore she's guilty. This is not something that you're going to bring to court, but it is something you're going to be able to be much more efficient with and see what's going on and look to the right areas to start asking the right questions, or in our case, look at the right emails.
Wow,
but, yeah, that was a terrific email to find.
Well, yeah, who would be dumb enough to respond to that? Like, I'd just be like, whatever, delete. And then I would call them and go, meet me here. Like, I watch all these criminal shows, and I'm like, God, if I had half the passion, you know, with all of the resources that are out there, you know, God, I could probably be a good criminal if I had the passion for it. If I could convince myself, if I could get past the values bind that I would be in. I'm thinking, these people are so dumb. Oh, my gosh. But I love crime shows, and it all started with Nancy Drew. She's the one that sucked me into all of that.
Oh, yeah. I was actually doing an investigation recently, and I'm like, I feel like this is a Nancy Drew novel. It's got blackmail, bribery, people going to jail. I mean, it was terrific. Not that I've read Nancy Drew, but it's what I assume it may be like. But.
Well, you might have read the Hardy Boys. Her
Hardy Boys would be the thing I should have quoted. Yeah, I realized that after I said it.
perhaps it was the Hardy Boys for you. And then, you know, my favorite board game was Clue. I don't even know if kids play board games anymore, but I loved Clue. It was Colonel Mustard in the library with the candlestick. I loved all those.
It is. I think everybody's playing them on their iPhones now. It's no more actual board games.
Oh.
I see everybody playing on the Scrabble on their iPhones. It's wild, but anyway.
Oh, it breaks my heart. You know, where's the human interaction?
We're missing it all, and it's a dying art right now, it feels like, with everybody going on the internet and working remotely.
Here's a great question. Does the lack of interpersonal communication today, because of texting and all of this stuff, does the lack of interpersonal communication today make reading body language for you easier or more difficult?
It's surprising. It actually makes it a lot easier because people have much more anxiety when interacting, when in person-to-person interactions. So the more anxiety you see, the more your thoughts come out. If you're extremely confident, extremely cool, you're not going to sit there, and when something makes you a little bit more anxious, it's not going to be very apparent. But when somebody is already a little bit anxious, you're going to see them. When somebody's anxious already and then more anxiety comes out, it's going to be very apparent, very easy to see. So it's much easier for me, although the cues that they're sending are varying greatly now. It's a few things are happening. Because it's such a global environment and the internet is really driven so much, we're seeing that what used to be very specific to certain regions is growing to much larger areas, and what used to be considered absolutely Western-based body language has crossed over into being international body language. So for years ago, when you'd see somebody over in Europe, if they were crossing their legs a certain way, if men were crossing their legs with their ankle on their knee as opposed to their knee over their knee to cross their legs, so a much wider leg cross called the figure four, we're going to see that everybody would be able to tell that's an American because only Americans did that. But now in our Western-based culture, and that American leg cross is actually crossed over the sea, jumped the pond, and now they're doing it over in Europe. And the European leg cross has come over the sea as well, and it's happening in America a little bit more. So we're going to see this kind of change in a more universal type of body language across the world, but it is much easier because people are much more anxious with their communication person to person. So whenever anybody's a little bit more anxious, it's easier to see any type of deception. It's easier to see any type of change in emotion or change in body language.
That would be my guess. Would be that it would be easier. That's what I was thinking, but I wasn't quite sure, so I wanted to confirm that with you. Well, Aaron, I have certainly enjoyed our time today. If folks want to get a hold of any of your materials or your upcoming white paper or books or take your classes, where can they find you?
So they can go on my website at aaronbrehove.com. That's AARON Brehove, BREHOVE.com. And that has a link to, you can contact me through there. You can order my book on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Go to your local bookstore and they should have it. And it just came out a few days ago, so hopefully there's a few copies still left. But, yeah, anybody can go to my website and that kind of direct them if they're looking for any type of training. Or you could always look up, I work with Janine Driver and the Body Language Institute in Washington, D.C. She trains people on various subjects, and it's a great course. There's 3-day courses, 5-day courses, and they're terrific. They're in-depth and very small classes as well, so they're great to go to.
Okay. And the name of your book again?
NACK Body Language. That's K-N-A-C-K, Body Language.
Awesome.
Techniques on Interpreting Nonverbal Cues in the World and Workplace.
Great. Well, thank you so much for stopping by and joining us on our show on a Saturday. And for those of you without a pen, unlockyourwealth.com has all of Aaron's links and more. Stay tuned because we have so much more Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio coming up right after this.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Dirodori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Duradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Duradori. Call Duradori now at 480-661-9662.
Wonder why money comes so easily to everyone but you? Tired of getting what you've always got? Need a new way of thinking to get ahead in life but don't have time to read a book on it? Now you can learn what the millionaires do that the masses don't with Unlock Your Wealth Radio to Go. Your 15-minute cup of millionaire motivation to get the specific strategies to ditch what doesn't work and have more of what you deserve in your everyday life. Join Heather Wagenhals to start your day the millionaire way. Listen to Heather Tuesdays at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Time at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation. 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420. Or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95 at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis. K-I-N-E-S-I-S Industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Too much month left over at the end of the money? Tired of stretching out your paycheck to the very last penny? Learn how to think like a millionaire, live within your means, and find true financial freedom with Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio. Tune in to the midweek update. 30 minutes of all the tips and tricks you need to manage your money. Listen to Heather Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and we just spoke with the fraud father, Aaron Brehove, and what cool info he had about body language and how to detect fraud. So hopefully you guys paid attention, took good notes. You know, I always take notes, and we have what we call our hot sheets on unlockyourwealth.com in our members area, and these are the fabulous little gems that we glean from each and every interview, and we have these ideas to capitalize on. For example, some of my notes from today's conversation with Aaron are keeping your body language, staying open in those three primary areas. If you want to build rapport with children, get your eye level lower than theirs. And to exude confidence to your boss or employer, just touch the door frame with one hand, and that establishes some confidence in your communication. It's pretty exciting. Those are just some of the fabulous notes that I took from our conversation. And we have yet another guest coming up, too, on today's show. And we'll talk with Don Radinius, and we can glean some more of that. And you find all these great tools to help you become financially independent from our website, unlockyourwealth.com. And all of this stuff, plus the Keys to Riches and our video series on how to incorporate these things into your life so you can create immediate financial wellness and get you and your family on that road to financial freedom. Now, I mentioned that it is it's Financial Literacy Month, and there are some really neat programs going on with financial literacy. We have a favorite organization that we like, the Institute for Consumer Financial Education, has quite a few projects going on, and I recommend that you surf over to their website at icfe.info, icfe.info, and go check out all of the great resources that they have available to you for National Financial Literacy Month. Now, in case you didn't know, government's shutting down. And what exactly is the price of a shutdown? I had an interesting conversation over dinner last night with someone who's actually worked some spreadsheets. We're going to try to actually get them on the show. I had no idea that somebody actually took the time to see what our issues are within the federal government. But technically, you'd think we'd save a lot of money, perhaps, wouldn't it? But actually not quite, according to CNNMoney.com. It would actually cost taxpayers money, and for every day the shutdown continues, the bill would go up. Says there's absolutely no way this saves money, says Bo Cutler, former director of the National Economic Council and a senior fellow at the Roosevelt Institute. It's pretty hard to put an accurate price tag on a shutdown. Official estimates of the cost incurred during the last major shutdowns in 95 and 96 vary widely. And the White House hasn't produced an estimate of how much a shutdown might cost, but it does say it will cost something. First, the government actually has to spend money in order to complete an orderly shutdown. When you have to shut something down, that costs money, and ramping something back up costs money, according to the deputy director of the Office of Management and Budget. Imagine a government construction project. Since it's impossible to know how long the shutdown will last, workers are forced to wind down all operations and secure the worksite. That costs money. But the question is, how did we come to this? It's a process that will be repeated across the country and in every government agency. Plus, when funding is restored, it will cost money to get projects back up to speed. But in the meantime, costs will increase the longer a shutdown drags on. The longer a shutdown is in place, the more extensive the costs become, according to John F. Cooney, a partner at a law firm, Venable, who designed shutdown plans for the government while employed at the Office of Management and Budget. And there is also the issue of federal worker pay. When a clock strikes midnight and a shutdown starts, paycheck for federal workers stop, but that won't be saving taxpayers any money. When an essential shutdown ends after Congress passes the spending bill, the essential workers who were kept on the job will automatically be paid for the time they worked during the shutdown. And the 800,000 or so workers who might be furloughed, in every previous government shutdown, Congress has authorized back pay for them as well, even for the days they didn't work. One caveat is there are no guarantees that they'll get the back pay. Here's the problem that I have with all of this. Because if you look at the spending trends, and that's why I want to have this guy Justin Kolb on our show, if you analyze the spending trends to see where we've come and budget-wise, he's gone back almost 100 years. Our military spending has been cut in half. Social Security has only crept by 3.5%, maybe 4%. The biggest growth area are these giveaway and entitlement programs. Over 40% of the federal government is giveaway, entitlement, and social programs. How is that helping any of us? I'm not exactly sure. So I am not going to belabor this point because I want Justin to come on and talk about this on the show, and he's got some great worksheets that he's going to have. For all of you, I'm kind of excited about that. So he's going to come on. Hopefully we'll be able to squeeze him in soon. But that's what you got to be paying attention to. The problem isn't that we shut down. The problem is that we pay people for the shutdown anyway, which is kind of silly. What was the point of shutting down if you're going to keep paying them? Authorizing all this back pay and all this stuff is nonsense. And what we should have done that would have been most effective is find or target the agencies that are not accomplishing what their missions were, and we were going to zero them out anyway, and start zeroing them out and shutting those particular departments down instead of the whole thing. I mean, it really seems kind of infantile. Well, I'm going to take all my marbles and go home. So, anyhow, enough's enough, especially when it comes to our airlines. They are attempting to raise fares for a 10th time. Didn't we just talk about this? Well, yes, they're going up again. Two major U.S. airlines are raising round-trip ticket prices by $10 on some domestic routes as they counter rising fuel costs. U.S. Airways initiated a fare increase last Thursday on most routes. Delta followed on most routes where it competes with discount airlines. JetBlue and Virgin America have already matched the increase, and the airline analyst Jamie Baker said Friday that JetBlue has also extended the travel period for the increases to include dates before and after the peak summer travel season. AirTran is also raising fares on some routes, not including those to and from Atlanta where it competes with Delta, and this is the first time AirTran has attempted a major fare increase in several months. Airlines have tried widespread price increases 9 times this year. 6 of them stuck. The last 3 failed within days because other airlines didn't raise prices as well. One way to tell if the latest attempt will be successful is if Southwest Airlines joins in and raises fares. It carries more passengers than any other airline in the United States, and it also regularly undercuts the major airlines' fares. Anyhow, oil is now above $110 per barrel, having risen 21% so far this year. Fare watcher Rick Shaney points out that the airline successfully raised prices 4 times in April 2008 when oil prices went from $102 to $117, and oil has already gained more than $4 a barrel just this month. Last but not least, this is so funny. Elena says, I picked this for you. If you are in the refund department, which so many people seem to be, if it's a big one, you might want to consider adjusting your withholding. And before I get started in this article, I'm just going to ask you, if I'm your pal, would you give me an interest-free loan for a few $1,000 for 14 months? If the answer is no, why are you doing that to your federal government? What do they do for you? Nada. So, Here's an article that substantiates my point. Now, according to the Associated Press and Dave Pitt, your taxes are done and you're excited about getting a $3,000 refund. It's hard to resist thinking about a big screen TV, a mall shopping spree, or a vacation. Those temptations are one reason why it's a good idea to consider changing your withholding so that you don't get such a big refund. When it comes on in one big lump sum, people view it as a bonus, and they spend it on something fun or a vacation or things that may be out of the norm, says Eleanor Blaney, a consumer advocate for the CFP Board of Standards. That's the Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, which provides the professional certification for financial planners. Taxpayers are more likely to spend a big check on purchases they may not have made otherwise had they received the money in smaller amounts throughout the year. If you are disciplined and you put the refund check in the bank or pay down a credit card or other debt, that's good. However, you still lost the use of and potential to earn interest on that money all year long. Ah! So of the 82 million tax returns the IRS has received by March 25th, 70 million people were due refunds. That's like almost all of them, right? Like 7/8. So the average refund is right around that $3,000 mark. So if you consistently get a big chunk refund, You can hold on to more of your money by adjusting the withholding tax allowance on a W-4 form. If you have been on the same job for a while, you probably haven't thought about what you put on the W-4 when you started years ago. You had to claim a certain number of exemptions, 0, 1, or 2, and you just did what you did. But the more exemptions you take, the less money is withheld from your paycheck. So you want to be careful not to take too many, which could cause you to end up owing money. But the ideal situation is to claim enough so you break even or get super close. The IRS recommends adjusting withholding if you receive a large refund or have money that is due that is more than you can comfortably pay. It says, when is a refund too large? It's a question only you can answer. Consider that the average refund is around $3,000 and the average personal income is just over $40,000. That means the average worker is loaning out 7.5% of his or her pay to the government interest-free. If you think you can use an extra 250 bones a month in your paycheck, I would consider changing that withholding. And since we are on a quest to tax day, our IRS tip, direct from IRS.gov, is tip number 2011-20, and the earned income tax credit is a financial boost for workers earning $48,000 or less a year. 4 of 5 eligible taxpayers filed for and received their earned income tax credit. The IRS wants you to get what you earned as if you were eligible. So there are 10 things that the IRS wants you to know about this valuable tax credit, which has been making the lives of working people a little easier for the last 36 years. To find out more, visit IRS.gov. I am so excited because our next guest is ready to chat with us. So please stay tuned because we have so much more in store coming up. Don Radinius on Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, plus the Keys to Riches and our Millionaire Minute, all that and so much more. Just a moment.
Hi, this is Scott Black with EmpowerYou.net. You're listening to Heather Wagenhall's on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside. They knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching could be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation, 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K-Free Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power, or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95. at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Duradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Duradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Hello Wagon Halls Unlock Your Wealth Radio. And we have our key guest waiting in the wings. Don Radinius is a globally recognized expert in business and personal performance improvement. He's appeared on numerous radio shows, spoken at more than 55 conferences and symposiums around the world, written more than 75 white papers on various personal and business improvement topics, published over 15 magazine articles, and has spoken at several universities, including Harvard. How cool is that? Don's written two books, The New Era of Financial Success and Process Management and Improvement for Business Teams. And he's also a contributing author to the book Six Sigma for Dummies. A graduate from the University of Minnesota in electrical engineering, he has over 38 years of business experience in a variety of key functional and leadership positions, along with 4 years of military experience in the U.S. Air Force. More than 25 years of executive management experience at VP, senior VP, president, and CEO level. He's been responsible for domestic and offshore business operations in excess of 18,000 people around the globe, including the United States, Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, Indonesia, China, Japan, and England. And Don now joins Unlock Your Wealth to talk about the new era of financial success. Don, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Heather, and let me thank you for being on your wonderful show. I really enjoy listening to it. There's a lot of valuable information that you provide to people.
Oh, thank you so much. And I take that as quite an impressive compliment, because your book, The New Era of Financial Success, is amazingly detailed and extremely comprehensive. But I would expect nothing less from a Six Sigma black belt.
That's correct.
You have peppered this with all kind of charts and illustrations and instructions, and it's just, it's amazing what you've done, and clearly all of your experiences have helped to shape what you feel is the new era of financial success. How did you come about writing this book?
Well, there was a couple things that got me to writing this book. One is I had a lot of experience in industry and solving problems and saving money and bringing down costs and making the organization more successful. So I got to thinking to myself, why can't we do that in the personal private sector as well? And then I started to see that the recession was coming on in 2008, and I'm a little bit older, so I've lived through a couple recessions, and I've had the benefit, if you will, to have learned from what those recessions can do to people. And I got to thinking, I'm very much a help others to be more successful kind of person. And so I got to thinking, why don't I take that knowledge I have about finances and business and other personal things as well, success, personal success things, and put that together in a fairly prescriptive book that would help people emerge from this recession much stronger and much more vital in their personal and financial lives going forward. So that was kind of the motivation for putting this together, the combination of wanting to help people, having worked in business and solved a lot of business cost problems, and the fact that the recession was going to become a turning point in a lot of people's lives.
Do you think this recession is different from others you've experienced?
Well, yes. The depth and degree of it is is significantly more. I mean, we rarely do we see unemployment at the 10% level. Rarely do we see such a devastating decrease in the home prices and people's assets that they have. So, yeah, this one was rather tough. But you know, if you look back at it, we kind of deserved it with the kind of spending and the way we got caught up in the whole digital economy. We sort of deserved what we got.
Just kind of? Just kind
of? Yeah, just kind of. That's a nice way of saying it.
I think some people didn't get enough of what they deserved.
That's well,
a little bit more harsh, I suppose.
Yeah, I still think that for a number of people, they just look at this as a transient incident that occurred in their life, and they'll get back to doing what they were doing. And unfortunately, the next big hurdle they'll run into if they take that mentality is when it becomes time to retire and they find that they have a lack of funds because they traded their future for their current pleasures and desires that they wanted.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We are totally leveraging our future financial stability for today's instant gratification.
Yes, and you know, your previous discussion was about the government and the budget crisis that they're in. When you really look at things, the government really is the people. And now, if you could just go back and imagine that all Americans were financially prudent, that they all had emergency savings accounts, they all had zero debt on their credit cards, their mortgages were in proper relationship to their income, and they were financially healthy, we never would have went through a recession, and our government would not be in the problem it is today. So I believe, and this is, it's hard to extrapolate this out, but I believe that if we as individuals were more fiscally responsible and financially healthy, we would not have a government problem.
Well, because we wouldn't have to rely on all of those social programs that are crushing us.
That's correct. And, of course, we all know that when we have social programs, it demotivates people. It makes it too easy. And then they don't strive and work hard. And that affects our productivity. It affects our gross domestic product. And we as a nation are less competitive. And it's just a downward spiral, unfortunately. We've got ourselves into that. I wish I was omnipotent enough to be able to say, here's the path out of that in the short term. I know it's not going to be easy, but I do know one thing for sure. If we as individuals are not more fiscally responsible and financially healthy, our government will never work its way out of it. It gets back to the individual.
Right. I also have a challenge, though, with the do as I say, not as I do mentality. Why should we manage our money effectively, but the federal government doesn't have to play by those same rules? That's one of my challenges.
Well, I don't like the position that the federal government is in, and some of the state governments, for that matter, but it's probably not as easy as we think it is. It's a really complex thing. And for the most part, a lot of the people in government are trying to do their best to make this whole economy and this whole education system and all this manufacturing and services and all that stuff work to the optimum. But I think the downfall on that is this partisanship thing that comes into play. And then they start doing really stupid things, and they forget that they're in office to make the country better, not themselves and their party better.
Ooh, somebody sees the light.
Yes.
Wow, I thought I was a lone ranger out here.
Oh, no. Actually, there are a lot of us, but our voices get covered up by the major media. We don't really get to say our what's really right and what we feel. It gets masked.
Right. Or heaven forbid, our radio and television programs are more popular, so then they have to fight for equal time. That's another discussion. But so what I want to focus on, because today's key is to take action and make assessments. So right now we're in our organic assessment phase. We're not making any decisions about our finances, but we're now starting to observe what it is that we're doing with our money.
by simply collecting receipts. That's all we're going to do. We're not looking at them. We're not cataloging them. We're not doing anything because we don't want to bias the outcome of the numbers. And that's what today's broadcast will be about. We'll be talking about that in our key segment. Now, what I like about the new era of financial success is you address things like we do that aren't financially related, and you have a list of key success factors. What are your key success factors as you've identified them?
Well, one is commitment and achievement. It really tends to start right there. If you can make a commitment and then keep it, your probability of success is going to go up significantly because of that. So I think that's number one, is I say I'm going to do something, I actually do it. A lot of people make, you know, the classic New Year's resolution goals, and they do it because it's sort of the thing to do, but they don't really mean it. And so as a result of that, everything falls apart after that. One of the other ones that I have, and I'm just kind of randomly going through these, is the ability to have some financial literacy. Money is so prevalent in our lives that it's just hard to imagine that we don't know more about it as a general population. We got to know a little bit about it, and if you've read any of the book, you will have noticed that I talk a fair amount about the digital economy and what that has done to us. That's the credit cards and the online processing on the Internet and the ability to get a loan on your house in 15 minutes by just putting some information in on the Internet. We don't get to feel. We don't get to touch. We don't build a relationship with our money. And so we start treating it kind of like poker chips at the casino. It has an abstraction. And we spend more than what we would like to. And so understanding how money flows into our livelihoods and then very quickly flows out to other people and how it behaves is a critical success factor in my mind. So commitment, achievement, and then financial literacy. Now, I follow that up with another key success factor, and that is that you have some kind of I call it a methodology. It's sort of a fancy word for a way to approach and manage or to deal with the processes associated with something. So in the book, I've written about a methodology called REACH, R-E-A-C-H, and that stands for recognize where you're currently at. It's kind of what you just talked about a few minutes ago. Just collect your receipts, start realizing where you're at. Then second is to establish where you want to go, what you want to be, what you want to accomplish. So if you know where you're at and you know where you're going, then you can start to think about how am I going to achieve that, and that's the A in the REACH methodology. And that's followed up by a C, which means if I get on this path, how do I know I'm on the path? How do I know when I'm starting to fall off from it? And we call that the ability to control yourself to stay on what you're trying to achieve. And then finally, the H is to have it. So I've created this methodology that allows people to take these five different steps, if you will, five phases, with appropriate tools for each phase and certain deliverables that you need to have as you go through the phases that will help you to seize opportunities both personally and financially and also to solve problems that are in the personal and the financial realm. So those are some of the critical success factors, I believe, that make it more likely that you will be more successful in your life.
Those are very similar to what we talk about here on the show as we work through our processes on the path to financial wellness. You have in your book, and I love how you set it up, it's all kind of project management style. I think that's kind of cool how you have it set up. What are some of the wealth and abundance rules we need to know when creating our financial plan?
Well, I have 11 different wealth and abundance rules that sort of encompass a set of behaviors about one's life that, as I like to say, increases your probability of success. It's never a guarantee, but if you do certain things, the likelihood that you will be successful, and I usually combine personal and financial success sort of together. I've come up with 11 different rules, and they're in no certain order, but I did put one, the first one down for a very specific reason. And rule number one was that you get paid for the value that you contribute, whether it's to your customer or to your employer. And so if you want a pay raise, you have to contribute more value. And a lot of people just at the gut level don't quite grasp this. They don't really realize that's the case. But I use a simple analogy here. Imagine that you were the owner of a small company, and you had another individual working for you, and you were paying that individual, let's say, $60,000 a year. That person does work for you, but you begin to notice that they only bring in about $40,000 worth of revenue. Well, you're paying them $60,000 for $40,000 worth of value. It doesn't take a whole lot of smarts and sense to figure out that that can't go on for very long, and you're either going to have to reduce that person's pay or let them go or find somebody else that can deliver the $60,000 worth of value. Now flip that around and let's pretend that you are delivering $120,000 worth of value. That's more than enough to pay your salary, to pay all those other social safety nets that we have, taxes and insurance, and allow you as the owner of that company to make a little bit of profit. Now, who is likely to get a pay raise or a bonus or a promotion? Well, obviously, it's the second person. So a lot of people have this attitude at work that, well, I'll just do what I have to do around here because I'll never get a raise or I'll never get a promotion. And it's just totally false, and it has misled so many people. You get more pay by increasing your value. Does it come right away? No. It usually is lagging by some amount of time. But over time, it's the individuals that contribute the most of the time that end up getting more pay, which then contributes to your overall financial success over your lifetime. So I think since we all work for a living, or just about everybody works for a living, that is a wealth and abundance rule that's very, very important to just about everybody in the United States and around the world.
I think that's a great one to share with us because I think that there's a disconnect on the understanding, too, because I think maybe some people feel, well, I've been around here so long that I deserve it, you know, just for being a placeholder, and I don't think people understand that it's not the individual that's paid, it's the position that's paid. And whether or not you keep that position depends on how much value you bring to the hour. And if you're not bringing the value, you're going to get cut or eliminated. And if you bring more value, then you're going to be promoted.
Yes, over time it will catch up with you. You will receive more money. And then there's another factor here, and that is that the more you do, the more you learn, and that's another wealth and abundance rule, the more you do, the more you learn, the more you can do. Consequently, the more you learn. And I can speak to that from my own personal side. I don't consider myself to be an overly intelligent person, but I am a person who likes to do things. And I volunteered. You know, they say never volunteer. I believe just the opposite. You should get involved, do things. I found myself in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma in 1987. I got sent down there because they were having some problems in a manufacturing plant, and they needed some help in turning it around. So I went down there and was quite successful at it, learned a lot doing that. And in 1988, I got asked to speak to the graduating class of electrical engineers for Oklahoma University. And I don't know if I drew the short straw or what, but I got the assignment, and I thought, well, I have to say something to inspire these new graduating engineers so that they can be successful. And I started thinking about how did I get to where I was at. I was 40 years old. I had a vice president title. I was making good money. I was well respected. I came from a town, by the way, of 120 people. Here I was in a mega business setting. And I said, how did I do that? And I started thinking about all the other people that I knew that I graduated with, how smart they were and how successful they were. And I couldn't find a good correlation between smarts or intelligence and success. And as I said, I don't consider myself to be the brightest person around. I'm certainly average or above. But I found in looking at that situation that I was always doing something, and I was learning something, and I was growing, and I was contributing value. And so basically that was my message to the people, is that the more you do, the more you learn, the more you learn, the more you can do, and therefore you increase your value. It's a win-win.
That's wonderful information. Well, it was so great to have you on the show today. And if folks want to get a hold of your book or learn more about you and your other areas of interest, how can folks get a hold of you, Don?
Well, the best way to get the book is to go to Amazon and search my name or search The New Era of Financial Success, and they can purchase the book there. The other way they can reach me is on my Twitter account, which is Don Redenius. Just put in one word, DonRedenius, and you can follow me on Twitter. The other place I like to direct people to is my Facebook account for New Era of Success. The best way to get there, because it's such a long reference here, is just to search for Era of Success on Facebook, and you'll find it. What I like to do there is on a frequent basis, I like to send out inspirational quotes and other tips and information that help people, not so much with how to save money or where to invest money, but different ways of thinking about themselves and their behavior so that they can go make different decisions and choices in their life that will make them more successful.
Oh, that's great, because, you know, I enjoyed that section on perception that you talked about in your book, and I really think that that has some significant value for folks. So thanks again for joining us, Don, on a Saturday, and make sure that if you didn't catch that info, visit unlockyourwealth.com for links to all of our show guests. You are listening to Heather Wagenhall's Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and we have Take Action, Make Assessment in our Keys to Riches segment coming up right after this.
Hi, this is Scott Black with EmpowerU.net. You're listening to Heather Wagenhall's on Unlock Your Wealth Radio.
Hi, it's Marty Logan here from the Top Gun Sales Academy. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is that the most successful people in life have coaches to guide them along their chosen path. Naturally, Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Tony Stewart, Tom Hopkins, and Robert Kiyosaki all had coaches. Whether it was their father, someone else's father, or another person who helped them to shape their desires into an achievable path to success with a system of accountability where quitting was the only way to fail. Each of these people had someone who didn't see them as they first were, but as the person inside they knew they could easily become. Truly, financial coaching can be the single addition you need to become financially independent. Call the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation now for your free consultation, 1-866-966-9420. That toll-free number again is 1-866-966-9420, or simply visit us on the web at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Like, has your cell phone or iPod ever totally run out of battery before? Maybe you're somewhere without power, like fishing, camping, or the beach. Now you can have all the power you need. The K3 Charger by Kinesis Industries uses wind and sun to charge your devices anytime, day or night. Use the wind and sun to store up charging power or charge your device right on the spot. Available now for $99.95. at www.kinesisindustries.com. That's Kinesis, K-I-N-E-S-I-S, industries.com. Like, go there, totally.
Hi, this is Melanie, and I'm part of Two for the Road USA. I'm the X from Boomer and X. I've been test driving cars for several years, but in the last 18 months, I found it difficult to get in and out of the test vehicles. I kept complaining the manufacturers didn't make the seats large enough until I realized it was me who was too large at 220 pounds. Thanks to the Duradori weight loss program, I lost 50 pounds. The Duradori program is physician-supervised, non-surgical, safe, and effective, and you can lose up to 5 to 10 pounds the first week and 15 to to 20 in a month. I did. It controls hunger and trains your body to burn fat, all on an easy-to-follow regimen of exercise, hydration, and delicious, healthy eating. It is a three-phase program combining medication, nutrition, and exercise. This is an affordable program with counselors available at any time. I went from a size 20 to a size 10 in 7 months, and I feel like a different person. Check out my photos on twofortheroadusa.com. Click on Watch Melanie Lose Weight on Diradori. Call Diradori now at 480-661-9662.
Wonder why money comes so easily to everyone but you? Tired of getting what you've always got? Need a new way of thinking to get ahead in life but don't have time to read a book on it? Now you can learn what the millionaires do that the masses don't with Unlock Your Wealth Radio to Go. Your 15-minute cup of millionaire motivation to get the specific strategies to ditch what doesn't work and have more of what you deserve in your everyday life. Join Heather Wagenhals to start your day the millionaire way. Listen to Heather Tuesdays at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Time at www.unlockyourwealth.com.
Even in today's economy, I, Count Dracula, have had to foreclose on my castle. But because of Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio, I have not only reacquired my castle, but I have opened a resort for the undead. Tune in to Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio. She's the only one not trying to suck you dry.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. You are listening to Heather Wagenhals' Unlock Your Wealth Radio, and it is Keys to Riches time. Yes, it is. And I am so excited because each quarter we get kind of renewed. It's a new level of excitement as we work through the keys and we start the process again. And I'm so excited about that. So welcome to the broadcast. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, thanks so much for stopping by. We look forward to having you. And to give you a foundation for what we're doing, the Keys to Riches is a baker's dozen of financial concepts that not only teach you how to think like the rich and be in control of your own money, but it also gives you specific techniques to create or fix your credit, reduce debt, save and invest, building wealth holistically, all while transforming your current financial habits into healthy money management skills. And we do this 1 week at a time, one key at a time from our Keys to Riches series. Now, last week's key, we kicked off the season with acceptance and affirmation. And we identify that we have issues when it comes to money, whether we don't have enough of it, we're not doing the right thing with it, or we're simply starting out versus starting over, and we don't know what to do, and we'd like some guidance before we go out and get ourselves into too much trouble. Now, today's key is to take action, make assessment, and this is our Going Green segment. I like this key because of its double entendre. It's green because it has to do with money, and it's green because it's organic. And you're probably going, what do you mean by an organic assessment? Most budgeting software or programmers or planners or counselors have you come in and talk about what you spend and how much you make. And they focus on that, and they do this snapshot, if you will, of where you are. They create a balance sheet of your assets and your liabilities, and then they say, okay, they do a cash flow statement, which is how much money I've got coming in versus how much goes out each month. And a lot of people are surprised to find out that they have a negative cash flow, and the only way to get to the negative means that we're spending credit in place of cash because we don't have enough cash to spend.
So therein lies the challenge that we have. And so then they sit down with all of their programs and calculators and stuff, and they say, okay, well, you can't spend this much here and this much here. We need to cut out X from your budget. We need to do this, this, and this, and move things around. And that's all well and good, except for one thing. What does that have to do with you as an individual and why you do the things that you do? We cannot abdicate the emotional component of human beings. And even though we have a key called take emotion out of the picture, we understand intimately here at the Unlock Your Wealth Foundation that we are emotional creatures first and foremost. And that's how we make our decisions, based on emotion, and then we justify with reason and logic afterward, not the reverse. But when we approach money management, we do it in the reverse. It is different for a person managing money for a business they work for versus their own pocketbook. My father was famous for saying that. He used to always say, I can manage multi-million dollar companies and take them from the red to the black in less than a year usually, but he couldn't balance his own checkbook. And the single factor was that he's emotionally engaged. We are emotionally engaged to the money we make because of the blood, sweat, and tears that goes into each paycheck. We work hard. Maybe we studied hard and went to school for a great number of years. So when we get that paycheck, we feel deserving, entitled, you name it, whatever word best describes how you feel about when that money comes in, that you want to do whatever you want to do with it. And that makes sense. It really does. But the challenge is that it's not about us being entitled to spend our money the way we want. It has to do with the obligations that we've made that we want to usurp or shirk for some reason. Or we've made commitments that perhaps we should not have based on money we think we have or based on our capacity or desire to have something irrespective of our ability to pay for it. And that's kind of what's gotten us into trouble when it comes to managing our money, because we're ruled by emotion. So it's not just a matter of looking at what you spend and what you save or don't save when it comes to budgeting. That's why here we break the budget. We don't create a budget, because budgets are something you go onto and off of just like a diet. It's not that you don't know you should spend less than you make. You know that. Everybody knows that. Who doesn't know that? Somebody who's not old enough to know that, perhaps. But yet, even with that knowledge, we still make decisions otherwise. We choose other options that are less than beneficial to us. And that puts us in our financial predicaments. And here we are. So the reason why we do an organic assessment over a period of time is for a few reasons. We want to get a big picture view, not just of what money is coming in and going out, but specifically when and why. And I don't want to say too much about this because I don't want to interrupt the organic nature of our assessment that we're going to start today. But we need a true big picture, not just a snapshot big picture, but like a mural, if you will. And in order to do that, it's going to take some time. And we want it organic for one reason, because we don't want to skew the results. Because when we start paying attention to things and focusing on them, we might alter the results. And the reason why we need an organic assessment is so that we can truly identify where the issues lie, so we can address the subsurface issues that keep us from spending less than we make. And if we create a budget or we start tracking things, because here's what happens. What gets monitored gets mastered, bottom line. So So we want to keep our assessment of our financial life under the radar, so to speak. We don't want to taint the results in any way, because then we can't address the true issues. Because it's not, again, like we don't know to spend less and save more. So there are things that happen or go on in our lives that we need to be able to say, is this what causes this? Because we can't change the effect unless we understand what the cause is. And one of the things about us as human beings is we behave differently throughout our pay cycles. We behave one way when we get our paychecks, because we're in the money, we're rich, so we're at the local bar or restaurant and we're buying rounds of drinks or dinner for like 20 people because, hey, we're rich today, we got paid. But then we live quite a different story life at the end of the paycheck cycle, because now we're hungry and we're broke, and now we're mooching off of friends or trying to find other ways to feed ourselves that don't cost money, short of going to a mission, or perhaps we do that too as part of our financial strategy. Who knows? Or we reach for our credit cards, whatever it is, because we're in denial that we're out of money. No, I'm not out of money. I got credit. I got a piece of plastic in my card, in my wallet, that says it's okay. Just like how Don brought up the chips in the casino. They take your money and they give you chips because you are less attached to that, because you are not looking at Benjamin looking you right in the face. If Benjamin can't look back at you, you don't really think about that chip being $100, because in your mind, $100 is represented by Ben Franklin. So what we need to do is identify these spending patterns. But we can't do it if we're paying attention to it. That's why we can't track it. Okay? The other thing that happens is we also spend differently at the beginning of the month versus the end of the month. We get paid, but we've got rent or we've got mortgages, we've got bills, we've got all this stuff. And at the end of the month, again, we're hobos. We're broke and we can't function. And this comes from stuff that has nothing to do with knowing whether or not we should spend less and save more. This is completely unrelated. And this assessment gives us the information we need to address what's truly wrong with our finances, and it's not about more money or less money, spending or saving. It has nothing to do with that. But we can't get to that core until we do this organic assessment. So here is how your assignment is going to work. In order to do this organic assessment, you need to get a big manila-type envelope, like a 9x12 envelope. And what you are going to do, only going to do, is to save receipts for everything you spend on, whether it's a credit card or a cash purchase. You're going to save that receipt. You're going to take that receipt and you're going to put it in the envelope. That's all you're going to do. You're not going to look at it. You're not going to write it down anywhere. You're not going to track it in any software or program on your computer. All you're going to do, thank you very much, take your receipt in the envelope. Take your receipt, put it in the envelope. That's all you're going to do for the next 5 weeks until we get to our break the budget key. Don't look. Don't think. Autopilot. That's all this is. Save the receipt. Take your receipt. Put it in the envelope. If you have a cash transaction that does not provide you with a receipt, such as a vending machine, cash that you give to your children for allowance, the paper boy, the valet, and on it goes, where you do not receive traditionally a paper receipt, taxi cabs, all of that stuff. So you need to create one. Take a piece of paper, a little scrap, sticky note, recycle some paper that you misprinted something, instead of throwing it away, cut it up into little pieces and write the date, what it was that you spent, like when you spent it, where you spent it, how much it was for, And if it was a particular time of day that you remember specifically, that too. And stick it in the envelope. Don't look at it. Don't write it down anywhere. Don't enter it in any computer. All you're going to do is save the receipts. Stuff them in the envelope and do nothing more. Don't think about it. Do your best to focus on your daily life. And aside from putting it on autopilot, you just want to forget what the grander purpose is. Because we do not want this action of saving these receipts to affect your decision-making when it comes to spending money. We want to get the most honest, most accurate decision-making that you're doing right now financially. And if you're starting to track it by writing it down or entering it into your computer or software in some way, when you start doing that, what's going to happen is you're going to start thinking about it and you're like, ooh, you might get a knee-jerk reaction when you think about it. Oh, God, but I got to put this receipt away. Now you're going to start thinking about, well, maybe I shouldn't even spend the money so then I don't have to put that receipt in there. But that's not good either, because denying yourself is only going to create a future financial event and usually more catastrophic than the initial purchase. So this is why we want to focus on creating this organic style assessment. So all you're going to do for the next 5 weeks is you are going to save your receipt. And this will capture the beginning of the month, the end of the month, the beginning of the paycheck, and the end of the paycheck over a few pay cycles. That's what's so cool about this, because it will allow us to get a truly comprehensive view of how we behave differently at different times in the pay cycles. And that's what we want, because what we're going to learn how to do is going to be so powerful that you'll be blown away. When we get to break the budget, you're going to be blown away at how we take this organic assessment to the next level and forever change how we manage our money. But it's got to start with an organic assessment. Fly under the radar. Focus on stuffing the receipts only. Taking your receipt, putting it in the envelope. And that is your assignment for the next 5 weeks, because this is going to help build our savings and spending strategy that we come up with when we get to our Break the Budget key. So this week's key for our nuts and bolts for Take Action, Make Assessment, our key statement is, in order to fully understand my financial picture, I must get a comprehensive view of not only what I'm spending my money on, but when and why. And the only way to accomplish this is an extensive and organic assessment. So our key affirmation item for this week is, I am successful at assessing my current financial state. I am successful at assessing my current financial state. And add this affirmation to your key affirmation list that we give you each and every week. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, because the power of affirmations is so vital to our success, because it's what's worked to our demise. We heard over and over that we weren't good enough, fast enough, strong enough, worthy enough, smart enough. And that over and over repetition telling us how crummy we were is what's gotten us to where we are, because we have no self-esteem. So we're going to use that same power in affirming what does work and how good we are and where we can go from here by using this affirmation process. So we're going to say our affirmations several times throughout the day. The first time we are going to say our affirmations is in the evening, right before bed. We're going to get out our affirmation worksheet that we created from unlockyourwealth.com, and we're going to take out this worksheet, and we're going to say each and every affirmation out loud to ourselves, savoring it, thinking about each one before moving on to the next one. This is going to set up our subconscious mind to work tirelessly throughout the evening to create new neural pathways that will bring us these affirmations into today's current world. The next time we are going to say our affirmations out loud to ourselves is going to be first thing in the morning. We're not going to roll over and kiss the spouse. We're not going to let the dog out. We're going to reach over and we're going to grab our affirmation worksheet from unlockyourwealth.com. And we are going to go through each and every affirmation, savoring each one before we move on to the next one, to focus our conscious mind, working toward our higher purpose of the day. We are taking and attacking this from two aspects, our subconscious and our conscious mind. And that will help us focus on our higher purpose, which is creating financial freedom for ourselves and our families. So we want to be focusing on what it is we're truly trying to bring into our lives, not, oh my gosh, I've got to drop clothes off at the dry cleaner, the kids off at school, husband off at work, and then I have to run around, try to do my job, and then pick up the kids, get them to their practice, and then make dinner and do this. No. We need to focus our conscious mind on equally important things that will take us to where we want to go, and that's our higher purpose of creating financial freedom. And then any time throughout the day where we encounter negativity after someone attempts to rain on our parade, we are going to pull out our affirmations immediately after this negative encounter. And we're going to find a place where we can go. Perhaps it's the bathroom stall at work or outside, down the street, in our car, somewhere, where we can pull out our affirmations and refocus our conscious mind on our higher purpose of the day, because we are not going to join their pity party. The brain is a powerful computer. It is the greatest supercomputer of the entire universe. And what you think about, you bring about. And if you're focusing on this shitty event that just happened to you, you cannot be focused on the goodness in the world and what you have in your life and what you're about to create. So that's why we have to bring out our affirmations yet one more time and say them out loud to ourselves. And do not be surprised or upset or feel like something is wrong if, by chance, it seems like your whole day is just comprised of saying affirmations, because I, too, have had those days. But it's so vital that we focus on what it is that we do want instead of dwelling on the things that we don't want, because, again, what we think about, we bring about. What we focus on, we find. What we filter for comes to fruition. So if we're looking for the crap, we're only going to find crap. But if we're looking for the goodness and the success and the freedom that we truly desire, we will find it. It becomes inevitable. And when our mindset is on the right things and focused positively, we radiate this throughout the universe. And what do we know about the power of intention? The world brings it back to us. So that is your key affirmation for today. Our key action item is to get a large 9x12 envelope, or more than one if you have lots of expenditures, many chitlins, and many obligations, several businesses. You want to make sure that you get all of these things. So you may need more than one envelope. And you are going to start collecting your receipts. You're only going to focus on taking the receipt and placing it in the envelope. If you are not issued a receipt, you will take and create one. And then you will place it in the envelope. That is all you are going to do. And then you're going to put the envelope back wherever you have it, convenient, and you are going to forget about it. The next time you make an expenditure, you're going to take the receipt and put it in an envelope. That's all you're going to do. We're not going to make any judgments. We're not going to jump to any conclusions. We are not going to track them. We are simply collecting our receipts. That's all that we are going to do. The longer we can stretch out our assessment phase, the more fully we can determine what our future course of action will be. I am so excited. This is such a unique time to do this organic assessment. So I engender all of you, or I empower all of you, to be a part of this process. So go to unlockyourwealth.com for specific instructions. If you didn't happen to write these down, we will have those available on our website at unlockyourwealth.com. I want to thank my guests, Aaron and Don, for joining us, sharing us with us our body language techniques and our reach methodology for accomplishing what it is that we truly desire in our lifetimes. I want to make sure that you all are aware of our Tuesday show with our Unlock Your Wealth Radio To Go, your 15-minute cup of millionaire motivation, giving you the specific strategies you need to think like a millionaire and start your day the millionaire way. My name is Heather Wagenhals, and you have been listening to Unlock Your Wealth Radio this Saturday. Thank you so much for joining us. And finally, financial freedom can be yours at www.unlockyourwealth.com. Now go out and make it a millionaire's day.